This is Turner Mining Live, where we give you a behind-the-scenes look at how we're innovating to change the game and grow a business in an ancient but still booming industry.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Turner Mining Live podcast.
Two this year already.
This is a record. And this is the earliest one we've ever did. It is currently 8:40 in the morning.
Yep. No beer today, boys.
I've seen you drink a beer at 8:40.
Oh, for sure. I just got to be on a golf course. Not in the office.
Yeah. This one will be fun. So to my right is the guy that has kept me out of trouble all these years, Thomas Hahn.
Yep. What's up?
To my left is the guy that's keeping me out of trouble currently, Patton Deischer.
How's it going?
And we've got a fun guest today. This guy is new to the team. He's one of ours. He's one of our own.
Stud.
Yeah, he's a stud. Just made a cross-country trek in a Jeep, so I got to hear about that in a second. But this guy is someone that, you know, has got a lot of really good experience. He's someone that's making us all better here. Super pumped to have you not only here on the podcast, but here with us.
Yes.
How long has it been? How many days?
2.5 months.
2.5 months.
Like to the day.
2.5 months. Tucker Jensen, welcome. Welcome to the pod.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks.
Yeah. So this will be fun. Tucker's a guy that, and I'm going to speak a little bit for you, then I want to get who you are and what you're doing and why you're here and all that. But Tucker's a guy with a plan. Tucker's organized. Yes. Tucker likes details. So when he comes on this podcast and we don't have like an agenda laid out, you're probably a little bit worried. Like, what are these guys doing?
Yeah.
Patton does that too, though. He'll walk in and say, what's on the agenda for the podcast?
Oh, yeah. And then it's like, well, we sit down, we hit record, and we go.
I have no idea what is on the agenda for the podcast.
I'm slowly starting to learn. It's like I can go ahead and put that together and print it out, throw it on the table, and just crumple it up, throw it away, because we're going a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah, you just go wherever the podcast takes
exactly,
you.
Exactly.
Now, I do think we probably should start to get a little bit of an agenda, but
yeah,
so far it's worked.
Exactly.
So the reason we're doing this one this morning, I have committed, and you guys have committed, to making these happen.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit of a crazy week, so we had to move things around.
Yeah.
We normally do them in an afternoon.
With a beer, but that's okay.
We're going to get more podcasts done this year.
Is this the third scheduled time this
week? Yes, but I was curious, what is everybody drinking? Because since we're not drinking beer, I think it would be interesting to hear, what's everybody got?
I'm going
to
get a ton of flack from Ryan.
That's why I'm asking.
Oh, boy.
Patton, what are you drinking?
I actually just finished my coffee before we stepped in, so I am drinkless at the moment.
He's empty. Keaton?
This is so bad. Okay, for the record, I normally just drink straight black coffee, black espresso.
I was a little surprised based on you walking in.
This is the second one of these I've ever had.
Yeah.
My wife made me try it. So this is I'm going to mess this up because they abbreviate all of it. This is from Starbucks.
Okay.
Which I don't go to Starbucks very often unless I'm traveling. This is a grande salted caramel cold foam cold brew, no vanilla syrup, double shot of espresso added to it.
Okay, so you already,
this was like $9.
That's cute, by the
way. One. And how did you actually physically order that, or was this like an app thing where
This is me.
How do you say all that stuff
on the app? You don't have to say.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't. Okay. You're just like clicking.
Keep adding things until the price gets near $10. You're like, okay,
I should probably
just push order. Tucker, what are you drinking?
Chamomile.
Okay, so his is worse than mine. Chamomile.
Well,
his tea.
Steady.
Is that tea?
Every day.
Yeah.
You don't drink coffee at all?
No, I drink a lot of coffee. But
but he also drinks tea.
And what are you drinking?
Dude, just French press from home. Like just basic.
Yeah. Okay, so mine was the most interesting order, actually. Yeah.
Though, Keaton, it does look a lot like the coffee you got in Salt Lake on Monday, too.
That was number one.
That
was the first one. My wife's like, you need to do that. So we're not going to waste a ton of time talking about coffee. She got this stuff at home and opened the fridge. There's a cold brew jug, and there's this like tube of cold foam.
Yeah.
She's like, you have to try this. And she shakes it up and makes it. And it's really good.
Yeah.
So we're traveling on Monday. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to figure out how to order this. But I ordered it. It was terrible. It was too watery. So this one's got two extra shots in it.
Yeah.
So I might be bouncing off the walls later. But $9 coffee. I probably won't do that very often.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's our drink. Our drinks are out of the way.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear any cans open. I'm actually kind of surprised you're not drinking a beer. I thought maybe if any time...
It is Friday.
I mean, it is Friday, but not too many meetings today.
Okay, so we'll get into Tucker. That's probably a more interesting topic for the listeners. Tucker, I want to know, A, give us like 2 minutes. Who you are, where have you come from, what, if no one's ever heard of Tucker Jensen, who are you, what do you do, and then we'll get into why you're here.
Okay, yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on. Tucker Jensen, yeah, I'm the director of operational excellence.
Yeah.
A title that I think everybody's still getting used to. It's
absolutely
called like four or five different jobs here.
We've not been operationally excellent, is what we're saying.
Ding. Yeah. I'm a mining engineer. You know, grew up all across North America and spent some time in South America as well. I just counted it up the other day. We've moved 24 times in my life.
Jeez.
So far. Many of those accompanied by my lovely wife.
And yeah.
What a trooper. But
what,
yeah,
a saint.
Yeah.
I'm a mining engineer. I spent most of my time in surface and underground mines in North America. And I'm here with the Turner team now. I'm excited to see where we can take this, you know, fairly young organization.
Yeah, for sure. 24 different places. That's insane.
I should clarify, it's 24 moves. I've gone back and forth to different towns in the U.S., you know, different mining towns.
Okay, so that makes it so much better.
So the first question that comes to mind, because I want to get into why you're here and what all operational excellence means and all that, but the first, when you say 24 different places, and a lot of these are big companies, are there any worse trash fires than what you've walked into?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everywhere is the same. You know,
what we're trying
to accomplish here is not unique. The challenges we have are not unique to this business.
So when you talk about that, like, are those people challenges? Are those like using data? Are they making the right operational decisions? Is it just org structure in general? I mean, you've seen, you know, our challenges here and the growth journey and all that.
Different companies struggle with the same problems at different times.
Okay.
You know, where we are in our journey. And I, you guys were talking about the corporate life cycles book in the last podcast. Yeah. with Patton and discussing where you feel like we are on our own journey here with Turner. And I would just say people find themselves in cycles of repeating their journey. And it's all the above. It's people and how we engage with people and how we motivate people. And it's the consumption of data and getting way overboard sometimes. Yeah. And you have too much and you can't do anything with it. And it's, you know, shooting from the hip sometimes and
yep.
trying to find what feels right for the moment and maturity of the company. But it's everything.
We've never shot from the hip.
It's pretty cool to hear that, because I look back even before we started this, and I always looked up to certain companies, right? And then you get to a spot and you're like, yeah. Oh, wait a second. That company's screwing up as much as we are. And you grow and you get to another spot, or you hire some people from some of these big companies and they come in and say the same thing, like, oh, wow, you guys think you have problems. You should go live where I just live in this billion-dollar business. They have some real problems. And I don't know, it just makes me – it makes me appreciate the journey, because I think every company's on a journey. But B, like – It is really interesting to hear that you don't ever just fix all the problems. Like, the problems aren't always, they're never always fixed.
Correct.
And I always had this misconception that someday when we do this, or when we hit this milestone, or when we get this system, or, you know, when we hire this person, it will all be fixed. And I've just kind of had to come to the realization that it's never going to all be fixed. Talking about that, we brought you here. Really interesting story. I talked a little bit about it on the last pod with Patton. Give me your version of how you came to be here, and what, you know, you had some things going on with your previous role, and then you get kind of a phone call. I don't know if you got a phone call out of the blue. I don't even know, you know, how the powers that be came together to get you here in the room. And then once you were here in the room, it all seemed to click. So I don't know. Give me your take on how that went.
Yeah. You know, I reflect on it quite a bit, actually. I'm really enjoying it here, and I find myself feeling pretty lucky that I am here. Early parts of my career, I did, you know, really whatever it took to continue to learn and progress and grow, and that took us to some interesting spots in this world, in other countries and various roles at different levels. But it was always kind of, you know, something that we were doing to pursue success in my career, and my lovely wife, you know, kept up with me and pushed me to succeed along the way. And when recently I left the company I was working for previously, we decided that, you know, certain things in our lives may be more important than living, you know, somewhere we don't want to live.
Yeah.
And so we were thinking about where
Indiana was not a destination spot for you guys.
You know what? If you've not been, you should come. It's beautiful.
That's what I keep telling everyone.
Southern Indiana, it's baby.
Gorgeous. Now, you know, so we were looking at different options, and some of them were the classic opportunities in Alaska or in Mexico, yep, or South America. And we could have gone and done one of those, and it would have been, you know, another great experience. I'm sure we would have made the best of it. But I got a call from Liz Freeman. She talked my ear off for an hour and a half, which
that is very
not the normal experience when you're out, you know, looking for a job or getting headhunted. That's not, yep, you don't ever either find someone that engaging or you're doing a lot more work. And Liz just, you know, just did an amazing job. Really sold me on the things that make this company special. That's really all it took. I mean, I talked to you, Keaton, afterwards for an hour, but that didn't really, you know, that didn't.
That was boring sell me compared to her.
I mean, compared to Liz,
yeah.
You know, I was already working here. Yeah. Put that phone down.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
No, but we, you know, we moved here and haven't looked back. It's been a lot of fun. It's only been 2.5 months. Some days it feels longer, and some days it feels like I just got here. But yeah, you know, it's a family, and it's been excellent.
So you probably, I'm assuming, I mean, you've been on the owner's side. When I say owner's side, you've been on the mine owner, mine operator's side for most or all of your career, right?
All of it.
Never been on the contractor side.
That's correct, yeah.
We call this the dark side, right? Because there there are a lot of, and I'm not going to get into all the details of why, but there are a lot of, you know, scrappy characteristics and hustle and grind, especially when you're coming into a company that's only 7 years old.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of BS that you have to chew through, right? When you're on the mine owner's side, most of these companies are, you know, if they're not a junior miner, they're a publicly traded multi-billion dollar, usually multinational company, have a lot of process, have a lot of org structure established, they're older, you know, things that we don't in the past have not had. And so, you know, when people come here from a larger company, they can say, wow, you know, where's the SOP for this? Where is the process or the guideline for that? And it's like, I don't know, you got to build it. So you coming from where you came from, being on the owner's side, working in larger mines, why would you even take the shot at coming into a contractor's business? Because, I mean, part of it's us, and you got sold by Liz, master salesman. And I think we do a good job of attracting people here, but it can also, you can also jump into this business after the first 30, 60, 90 days. And I asked you this a few weeks ago. I'm like, hey, do you regret your decision yet? Because you can jump in and there's a fire everywhere, right? All we deal with as a contractor are problems. People hire us to solve a problem.
Exactly.
Which means that every single day, whether you do a really good job or a really bad job, you're dealing with the problem.
Yep.
You know, now we've got ways to optimize. There's a lot of opportunities in solving problems, but it can become overwhelming when, you know, you're dealing with problems every day. So did you originally think you were going to come to a contractor, and why did you come to a contractor? And then do you regret any part of that contractor experience? Because that's unique, coming from where you came from to this side.
Yeah, it's a different way of thinking. But at the end of the day, what we do is similar. You know, at least from my experience and you know, the part of the business that I can affect, it's similar. We take big rocks, we make them smaller, and we move them from here to there. the owner's experience is similar to the contractor experience. Do we think a little bit differently? Yeah. Is our business model a little different? For sure. But it's similar work. And we're, again, to go back to earlier in the conversation, presented with similar problems. Mm-hmm. There's not an owner out there operating a large mine in Arizona or Nevada or wherever that isn't dealing with problems all day. Mm-hmm. The same ones we're dealing with, maybe with a different spin on them.
Yeah.
It is funny, though, watching Tucker come in from, like you said, a larger organization that has a lot of this in place. We have a lot of conversations because a lot of what Tucker and I do is some of this organizational development stuff and build process and structure. And we often have conversations where there's something we need or don't have, yeah. Like, okay, add it to the list. And Tucker, being the ultra organized person he is, has this list running. And yes. I'll see him throw something on, and it's like, oh, yeah, add it to the list. And he's like, scroll, 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 and put it at the bottom. It's like 6 miles long. Someday we'll check everything off on there.
Yeah, prioritize it and work through it. But but it's right. There's not an end to the list. It's going to keep growing, and it's about what do we want to tackle first.
So you're here. You've been here 2.5 months. What's different than you expected?
Yeah.
Because what I want to do with this podcast, and I told these guys, I don't think I told you this yet, I wanted to get you on as early as possible to this podcast while all the shock factor was still fresh and the hose you were drinking from is still flowing, because everyone that comes here, especially on staff, drinks from a hose for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And then I want to do this again in like 6 months to see what's changed, because I know your list is going to be longer than it is now. You'll have knocked a bunch of things off of it. But, I don't know. I'm really curious what is different than what you expected. You know, when you're making the trip to Bloomington for the first time, you and your wife have committed to move here. You bought a house. Like, you didn't dip your toe into this. You swan dove into this thing.
Yep. Gladly.
Is there anything that wasn't what you expected, whether it was better or worse?
Yeah, I'll speak to one of the things that was more surprising to me on the business side that I think is a unique opportunity that we have here, and that's that this is a small private company with the founders still being present. Coming from the owner side, large publicly traded company side, you're dealing with a different set of stakeholders than we deal with here.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I didn't expect it to be as different as it is. And Keaton, I've come to you a number of times and said, can we do this? And you're like, yeah, whatever you think. I mean, get creative. Let's solve this problem. And usually the box is a lot smaller that you can think in in a big company. Right.
So are you surprised how involved I am in the business, or...
I'm actually surprised at how well you're doing at staying out of the weeds and out of the mud. I know you've talked about that as something you want to develop and continue to build as a skill of yours, as changing your leadership style as the scale of the company changes. I think you're doing a good job with that. Now, I'd say more that the business has flexibility to solve problems in unique and creative ways that bigger companies can't do.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a huge opportunity for us.
And you think that smaller box makes sense in those larger organizations, or is your observation that maybe the box needs to widen?
There's some things that limit the size of the box that you can't do anything about. Regulation, financial regulation, NI 43-101 in Canada, SEC reporting in the US. So those things, those aren't optional.
Right.
We were talking about procedure before, and where's the SOP for this? Sometimes that can limit an organization's creativity when you have a team spent 6 months developing this SOP and they put a stamp on it and the letterhead on it and revved it.
Yeah.
Now you can't change your mind.
Right.
And to go change that box takes about 500 other boxes
Up. Timelines.
Yeah. Well, I told Patton this a couple weeks ago, probably in one of our heated combats, and as we've obviously hired a CFO, comes on in April. Tucker, you're on the team. We're adding more legit people. One of my fears as we continue to do this year after year, bring more smart, solid people into the business. Most of these people are coming from large organizations, typically, not always. My fear is we lose our creativity. Yeah. And to me, when you look at the last 7 years and how we've been able to finesse our way to this size and this level and with these customers, it's only through creativity. You know, when a customer asks for a price one way, I want to give it to them three or four different ways. And they may still take the way that they originally wanted it, but at least it gets them thinking, right? When we talk about trying to find people, you and I had this one-on-one at the end of the year, and I always ask for, you know, critical or constructive feedback. And one of the things you said was, well, and I don't know if this was your feedback or from other people, you're like, well, some of the content we put out on LinkedIn belongs on Facebook or Instagram. And I took that and I said, okay, that's perfect. I totally agree with you. However, by us putting out all this different content, like, you know, kids standing on excavators dancing or whatever the thing is, does that belong on LinkedIn? No, but we also don't have the same challenges finding people that others do. Correct. So who's to say that's the wrong thing to do? So I'm going down a little bit of a rabbit hole, but my theory is, like, we lose our creativity the more smart, rigid people we bring into the business. And I don't want to, like, I think that as you get to a 40, 50, 60 year old company and beyond, a lot of the founders that kind of remove themselves, some of the creativity dies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't want to sound so egotistical that I'm the only creative one. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
I just don't want us to live in such a box or such a system or such a process that we aren't challenging people to be creative.
Well, you're instilling us, like, to, and when I say us, I mean the entire team, to step over the plate and, like, take a swing. I mean, there's been several jobs in the past where we've had it come across our desk and it's like, you know, 150 ton, 200 ton trucks. And we're like, yeah, we can't do that. And you're like, no, we're putting a number together. We're doing this. And it's, you know, same thing with, they have require a list of 100 different SOPs and reporting requirements. And, you know, half of them at the time we probably didn't even have. I'm like, okay, well, make them. Like, you know, why are we going to just start saying no? And yeah, there have been a few even recently that we've been like, well, no, we shouldn't touch it. It's like, no, we're putting a number together. We're doing it. And half the time we do them, and now all of a sudden we've done something new and we figured out how to get good at it. Maybe sometimes we don't, but if we just start saying no and stick where we're comfortable, I mean, that's not a good place to
be. I remember what the argument was.
I do too.
I remember as Patton's talking, I remember exactly what it was. We have a customer or an ex-customer, for better or for worse, that wanted us to do something that was kind of outside of our wheelhouse.
I'll say scary would be like the word that I would
use. Scary for like, you.
Yeah.
Scary for you. Patton didn't like that. I said, let's go try it. And I'm not going to get all the details because it's water under the bridge. But I never want to say no. I told this, I think maybe to Sarah at the Christmas party or somebody, say yes to everything.
Yep. You did.
I want to say yes until you get to a point, and we got to this point recently where we said yes originally. It ultimately, after a few months, didn't work out, probably for the better. And no harm, no foul. We walk away and we go do our other thing. But if we don't say yes initially, we never have the opportunity to see where it would go.
I think this one and where it landed is kind of fun reflection on both sides. Because from the start, my concern was, this is going to get drug out. We don't have ABC in order to go do it. And like, we just need to, you know, this is a distraction or whatever I had said. But, you know, me looking back on it now, the thing that I got wrong from the very start was starting from a place of, no, we shouldn't do it, or why can't we do it? And not like, okay, well, if we were to fit this in, how would we?
Right.
And it's that, you know, that's been my reflection. I think ultimately it ended in a place that's not shocking for a lot of us, but we still need that opportunity to go to and try.
I liked how, Keaton, you made the comment about being concerned about who is on the team and how that could potentially limit the box. And then I think about Tucker's comment of what is the first thing that he noticed, and frankly, it sounds like is enjoying, is that flexibility. I think it's leadership's challenge to make sure they're finding people who don't necessarily always go to that negative response, where they instead, to what Patton said, kind of think, how can I solve this? And that's how you help limit kind of that decay of creativity, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Tucker, this resonates with you, but I've said this before to some of our people. There is no one coming to save us, right? Like there's no board of directors that's going to jump in and say, oh, no, here's how we're going to go do this thing. This is up to us to build it. Yeah. And we can build it however we want. We can build it real fun and sexy and cool and run fast and break things. We can build it very stoic and corporate and methodical and never take a risk on anything. We can kind of bounce in between, which is a little bit of how we've done this over the last 7 years. But the beauty of it, and this is where I have the most fun, and it sounds like you're having fun with this too, is there are no rules. We make the rules. There are no end customers that we have to sell to. We can sell to anybody we want. There are no industries that we have to stick to. If we wanted to start selling baseball cards tomorrow, we could pivot and do that, you know. And to me, that is the beauty of solving problems for customers. It can be contract mining. It can be crushing. It can be drilling. It can be
staffing.
It could be some underground thing. I don't even go underground. But, to me, that's the beauty. And how we build the team to go solve those problems, to me, is the most critical thing, because I don't want to lose our creativity, but I want to become... I want to continue to chase the best version of this company we can be. Yeah. And that's why your role, chasing excellence, which is the new fourth core value. We're not going to get into all the details, 'cause we'll save that for a different one. But you and your role helping make us better, but still keeping our creativity.
Innovation. Third value. Yeah. I think... Why I like kind of where we are currently is I think we feel that tension back and forth between kind of that excellence value and that innovation value. And I think that's a good, healthy tension. I think we need to manage that tension, you know, for the rest of the company to frankly have the success that we want.
Tucker, do you and your role in being an organized guy and, you know, you're an engineer, right? So I won't hold that against you, I promise. Because I say that jokingly, but engineers struggle with creativity sometimes, exactly. Right? They're used to living in a, and maybe you say, oh no, I'm an engineer that I don't struggle with that. I don't know. I think certain finance people struggle with creativity. I'm not really good at any one thing except for maybe being creative. So you could hold that against me if you want. But as we continue to grow and add people to the team, how do you feel that we're able to stay creative? Like when we get a customer request, recently we were on a unit rate relationship with a customer, and we're pushing to go to a flat fee for a lot of different reasons. Like that's not typical for a contractor owner relationship. Yeah,
you're not going to see that on a bid form.
Yeah, they're not going to ask for just one big number and do your best sort of thing. So how do you feel that we're going to be able to stay creative when we get more smart, organized, educated people like you into the mix over time?
Well, I think what Thomas said is probably the most important bit, and that's a continued focus on the values. You know, I like the comment you made about the tension between the innovation value and the excellence value. We feel that tension every day when we're putting out new systems, Pat and I working on things and constantly having that discussion about where that balance point is or should be.
Yeah.
Now, are we getting too detailed and prescriptive and corporate, or, are we too loose and fast with this process? And, we have to seek that, middle ground, that compromise in every decision we make. But, you know, right now we have Keaton and we have his leadership, and it's a beacon for the direction that Turner's going. I don't think there's anyone out there that would say, oh, those guys aren't very creative, those Turner mining guys, right?
They actually would probably say the opposite.
Exactly.
Maybe too
creative.
Right? Yeah. So for now, while we have you, for as long as you'll put up with it, I'm sure, we have that. But the effort that went around crafting those values and the way that this organization talks about the values, I think will be lasting. So the values aren't, you know, wall art. I like to say that. I've said that to you before, Keaton. Here at Turner, they're not wall art like they are at other companies. We talk about them, and we talk about them a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that will be enduring. As long as we continue to focus on those values, that will inspire the legitimate people you bring into the organization to find that groove, find that compromise, that common ground between, you know, overly detailed and overly overly loose,
yeah,
so that we can still have fun, be creative, but still get the job done and be sustainable at what we
do. Yeah, that was one thing you said in our one-on-one, our annual review we had a few weeks ago that really caught me by surprise and kind of shocked me, because I stay as involved and as close to the day-to-day as possible. But one of the things you said was you were, I'm going to probably misquote you, but you were surprised how much we actually talk about and at least attempt to live out our values here, our core values. And there's only four of them. There were three of them when you originally joined, and then we added a fourth. I don't know. You're in a lot of meetings with a lot of people, right? And it's easy for me to preach them because I'm one of the guys that helped come up with them. But yeah, when you compared our company and how we're talking about our values and other companies, again, I have a very small glimpse of career experience because I've either worked for the family or worked for myself, and I haven't worked in these big companies. I don't know. It was somewhat alarming that other companies don't lead by that. How do you lead if you're not leading by your core values? You know?
Yeah, it's different. It's different here. I think people, you know, in any organization, there's a lot of people that just want to go to work and do a good job. And so I think, you know, that leads people down a fairly consistent moral path.
Yeah.
Everyone's more or less behaving, and lots of company values align roughly,
yep, with
that part of the human experience. But when you're explicit about the values, and I'm not kidding, I hear at least one of the values once a day being promoted by one of our employees or our staff at site or folks here in Bloomington. So that's the next level, when you're bringing the values themselves and identifying it as a value when you're talking about it. That's different than just kind of generally being led by, mm-hmm, your you know, root personality.
Yeah.
You know, you're so to me, that does set us apart. I have not worked for a company before Turner Mining Group that I guess I could say I'd reasonably expect every employee at Turner Mining Group to be able to list off the four values.
Yeah.
I think that's true, and it's not true for, yeah, any other company.
Yeah, that's cool. I was, like I said, I was blown away and in a good way, because I think it's easy for us to hear them a lot, and we've heard them a lot over the years when we talk about them. And, you know, I want the same thing for any new employees that come into this company, is to say, wow, they are actually leading with their values, right? Like, we'll get into the excellence thing. I don't want to harp on core values forever, because people put them to sleep.
It can, but I actually think part of why Tucker says that is, like, it is part of the discourse. And my challenge to other leaders that listen to this would be, hey, like, if you have core values, you actually have to talk about your core values. Like, that is on you as a leader of the organization. And Keaton, you do talk about them a lot.
Yeah, so, it's a good, I mean, how many, if you're in another company, if you're not in Turner and you're in another, do you know your company's core values?
And Tucker's getting at that. It's, you know, I would say whatever is on the wall is on the wall. Whatever you talk about regularly and, like, do and act on, like, that's actually your core values. So
yeah, we don't even have ours on the wall.
No, they're not
spoken about, which is kind of ironic.
Exactly. But I think that's really where Tucker's going, is like, hey, you know, a challenge to other organizations, like, it's not about, like, crafting some perfectly worded thing. It's about, like, what are you trying to go build in your organization? And then, like, do that, talk about that, yeah, live that, which I think is a great push.
Yeah, that's key. That's key, especially for you two, right, Thomas and Keaton. You guys can't go out and solve the problems. You've got to instill those guiding principles for your folks to go out and solve the problems, yeah, for your teams to go out and represent you. And you know, lots of folks in your positions are, I would say, distracted by talking about, you know, the core business numbers and KPIs and performance stats more than they're talking about people or than they're talking about values.
And
they get into this, you know, waste of time where they're trying to solve the problem when they've got a whole team of people that are, you know, they're supposed to be out there solving the problem. They're just doing it from the approach.
One of my biggest strengths, or maybe biggest weaknesses, depending on who you ask, is I love to go solve the problem. Probably too much. I don't think we've been on site together yet, Tucker, you and I. Have we? Have we been on any of our...
We've traveled together, but not to a site.
Not yet. On one of our sites. This gives Patton heart palpitations every time. Every time I jump on site.
And from owning a hard hat.
Because I become an expert in all things mining and equipment and...
Expert operator overnight.
Operator. So I can't wait to get on site with you, Tucker. You're going to see a new side of me. But we're going to switch gears because we could. I don't even want to touch that. I get myself in trouble on that. I want to talk about the team because you jumped into a brand new team. You came from a team. I'm assuming they were some you know highly effective people where you came from. You come into this team, and we've got really good people. Everyone that's still here. And I say still here because we've made a lot of changes over 7 years. I hired some of my best friends that have come and gone. We hired some legit people from multi-billion-dollar companies that have come and gone. And some people have stayed. But we're always iterating on the team. We changed the org chart, you know, right after you jumped in here. Mm-hmm. And we didn't change it around you, but we were kind of in the process of changing it. And then when you jumped in, we thought, okay, it's... Now is an even better time to reorganize it a little bit more. But to me, there's this quote, and I rings true all the time to me. So goes leadership, so goes the company. And that can be in a positive way, that can be in a negative way. And I'm the thing I'm so focused on, and Patton's focused on it, you know, you're in the mix now, and I think you're focused on it, is bringing in really good leaders. These are people that have to live our core values, a heart for people, an eye for safety, a mind for innovation, and I want them to chase this excellence, this attitude for excellence thing. But I want to know how you feel with the team that you have around you. And it can be, you know, people that are at our sites, because I think you've met most or all of them now. It can be people here on staff that you're working with. Like, do you see them living out our core values? Because I think everyone that's left here does a pretty good job of living out our core values and kind of chasing a better version of themselves as the company is chasing a better version of itself. We showed this graph at the end of the year, where as the company grows, the individuals have to grow along with it. Otherwise, you kind of get thrown off the bus.
Yep.
And it's a really weird illustration because we've seen this over time, at least in the past, where the company has grown a lot. The individuals on the team aren't growing with the company. And so we get to a place where we have to replace them, right? You haven't kept up. So I'm curious how you feel about the team around you now. What do you look for in a high-functioning team? You know, what's the state of the union at 2.5 months in with the people that are surrounding you now?
It's a good question. I think it's probably the second most surprising thing, having, you know, just a short time here with Turner, is in any business book or podcast you listen to, they're going to flick words at you like collaboration and synergy. you're always in the pursuit of these things that are poorly defined.
Yep.
When I got here, I finally found the meaning to some of those words. In previous lives, you engage with folks who are very high potential, and have their own operating controls, their own targets, their own KPIs, their own domain over which they're responsible. But one thing I found lacking is that collaboration and that synergy among leaders that are responsible for different parts of the business. Everybody has strengths, and that's why they're in charge of that aspect of the company, or that's why you're a project manager at one of our sites, or you're operating a haul truck. True professionals in charge of their responsibility, but each of us has skills that can, when in combination with someone else, get something done that we couldn't do individually. That's collaboration. Yeah. And I've found that here more than anywhere else. And it's not just in this office. It's really strong in this office. And I think that's what inspires some of our our field and site leadership or folks that are at, you know, different operations within the company, it's inspirational to see folks in this office in particular working together the way they do. It's, you know, those of you who haven't been to Bloomington, it's a lot of glass. So we can see and hear each other.
Yeah, for better or worse,
right? There's this culture where, you know, there's no secrets to what the problems are. So yep. People get involved.
Yeah.
And you don't hoard your problem and try and Superman it and solve it yourself. You get other people involved and, you know, in my role, I'm jumping in and doing things I didn't think would be under my umbrella, but I'm glad to go and help out. Right. Because that's just what the culture is here. And I feel it here. I feel it when I'm on calls with site leaders. You know, we've got some great leadership in West Texas that is just constantly looking at how they can improve the site. And you stretch them a little bit with, say, a new survey reconciliation technique, and they just latch right on. And I don't know why Patton's saying maybe he's got a negative outlook on work or whether we can or can't do something. Patton's like the biggest cheerleader for being able to get things done. So,
yeah. You know, it's funny you use the word cheerleader. I think some of his peers would use a different word than cheerleader.
Hey, I was called extremely optimistic yesterday.
Oh, boy.
How hammered was the person that you were talking to?
They are the most pessimistic person I know. So.
Well, there you go.
The bar was quite low. Yeah. The bar was quite low.
Well, I want to talk about this for a second because one of the biggest mistakes I've made in my career, and I think the biggest mistake we've made in this business, was allowing some massive silos to be built and massive walls to be put up between teams. We lived through this, and we've talked about this in depth on old podcasts. You can go listen to them, but I allowed, and these were all really good people. These were all people with good intentions, I believe, that wanted to grow the business in their way.
Yeah.
But we just, you know, me as a leader, I allowed the teams to be decentralized and work independently and in a power vacuum where there was no collaboration. And they still got things done, right? But it was a lot of the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. And we see this all the time with some of our customers, right? You go to one site, they have no clue that these other sites even exist and vice versa. And so the fact that you're, you know, now kind of talking about collaboration as this pendulum for our company has swung back, some of the constructive feedback I got recently was that it's kind of like decision by committee now. When used to, people had the autonomy and the authority to go make a bunch of decisions on their own, for better or for worse. Now it is, you know, we're kind of forging the teams all into one. We want collaboration across different functions of the business. I don't necessarily want it to be decision by committee. We don't have to have a vote on every single thing we do, but the right hand needs to know what the left hand is doing. And in the past, that hasn't been the case. And so I kind of have a little bit of a two-part question. One, do you feel like we're decision by committee? Are we too collaborative in our decision-making and our efforts as a team? That's the first question. The second question is your proximity to Bloomington, physically here in this office. We've got a nice office in Salt Lake. We were both there earlier this week. You can look at the mountains. It's gorgeous, right?
Very nice.
It's an even bigger office than what we're in here. How do you think about if you were to make your decision over again in two and a half months ago and didn't physically move here and weren't in this glass environment where we're all kind of yelling at each other and trying to solve problems quickly, like, how do you think about that impacting our ability to be collaborative? Do those two questions make sense?
Yeah, I'll take them independently, though. We'll start with the first one. Do I think we make decisions by committee, and is it over the top? I would say slightly, yes.
Okay.
But I think we're aware of it, and I think it's not because that's where we want to be. It's just where we have to be. We've got a lot of, like you said, with new people and new roles. And I think everybody's kind of getting used to their, we're delegating that authority, and we're getting used to it. And
they're being very careful
and building the systems so that the left hand can still know what the right hand's doing when the right hand takes responsibility.
Yeah, I love that.
So but we're in that period of transition where we have to define all of that. And you know, it's interesting that here it's not nobody's scared to raise their hand and say, hey, something's not working right. You know, even just the other week, Patton's pretty good at this. When something's not working right, we just say, okay, stop. Like, let's regroup. Let's stop, figure out
everybody on the phone.
Yep.
That's right. You know, cause we do, we operate across the US. We have folks all over the country, and we do a lot of work remotely, over the phone, over Zoom. And, you know, we have to have people that are out there making good decisions. So it can't be decision by committee all the time.
Right.
Certain things needs to be, you know, when you have major investments, major plans, major clients, we do need to get more people involved and get that extra perspective. But getting those teams to make decisions, communicate effectively and work together when they need to. It's a science. It's an art. It's something that you're going to continue to perfect, you know, forever. So, I think we're at a stage where we're making decisions as groups, and it's because we're getting more comfortable with where everybody is in the business.
Yeah. I like that.
But speaking of where everybody is in the business, I would say, personally, I would not be as effective in my role if I was living in Arizona, working from my home office, dialing in on Zoom every day. It's like the floor of the New York Stock Exchange in this building sometimes.
Yeah, it's wild.
You know, like the old school tickets everywhere. Like, you will miss some context if you're not here.
Yeah.
Well, and the context, and also, I mean, we do have kind of a, you know, it is a working team, but it's also somewhat of a community. And you also miss out on, like, the small things to build the relationships with the people you work with. Like, every once in a while, we'll be at lunch, and we'll be sitting and looking at $300 cars on Facebook Marketplace with Jake playing in our race car team. Right. And it's like that, you know, carries over.
That's actually a true story, too. Like, that, you guys need to get your lives together.
That's a true story on multiple occasions.
Yeah. Every time I walk into a conversation with you, Patton, Tucker, and Jake.
It's about a car.
It is always about a $300 car that doesn't run.
Yet.
Well, so I would say the biggest thing that I've seen, and again, we've made this massive pendulum shift. You know, Austin moved here. Mm-hmm. Tucker, we had you move here. Jeff, new CFO, he's moving his family from California, a bunch of young kids. You know, the pendulum has swung so far back in this direction and getting people physically here. I think one of the biggest things is speed, right? Like, I think you could still be super effective living on the other side of the country. I think you'd make an intentional effort to stay in touch with everyone and build relationships. You're just that kind of guy. You're intentional. You're the best listener I think we've ever had on the team. There's some times where I'm like, he does remember how to speak, right? No, he's just listening to everyone. I think the thing that we would suffer from if you're not physically here is speed. And how, you know, you hear something that happens, whether it's with somebody else's office, you can kind of hear through these glass walls. It's very easy to just walk in and say, oh, hey, sounds like we have a problem. Let's go fix that, right? Yep. If we're remote, and we've lived through this, you might not know that's a problem for 2, 3, 4, 5 days. And so the speed in which we can go address the problem or talk to the person or figure out whatever the thing is we need to go figure out, we're just slower as an organization. And the guy I bought my house from, Jay Bear, he actually goes by Tequila Jay Bear now because he's such a famous tequila influencer.
Dude crushes it on TikTok.
He's unbelievable. He's an author, New York Times bestselling author. He's a really cool guy. One of his mantras in business is the customer cares the most about speed.
Yeah.
Especially this day and age where we're all in this like instant gratification. You know, our phones are right here. We can have an Uber deliver us lunch in 10 minutes, you know? And so when I hear Jay talk about how much a customer cares about speed, as a contractor, we have to respond quickly.
Yeah.
And if we're not all physically here in a high-functioning team environment, our response time is just slow. That's the one thing that I would say is different that I've seen.
Yeah. And we've seen some leaders in our organization find ways to combat that, I'll say, lack of like instantaneous response by just like leaving Zoom up for whole days at a time when they know they're like in it with the team. They can't physically be here for one reason or another, but like they're trying to create proximity, you know, of that instantaneous kind of connection, even if they're not co-located in the moment. Yeah. And that would be my big challenge to leaders who are remote is just how often are you connecting? Yeah. Because you said 2 to 3 days. That made me my head spin. I'm thinking like in 2 hours, sometimes we make a decision that we learn something, set, you know, get the right people in the room, and then we
and go buy $1 million machine an hour later.
We go through sprints where you know, like we'll have Cade who's across the country and Tucker and I will be on with him for like 8 hours in the day. It's like, we're not leaving this until we get this thing done.
Yeah.
Cancel everything else. And it's like, it's creating the proximity.
Yeah. And Cade, I'm glad you highlighted Cade. I wasn't necessarily thinking of him, but I think he does a better job than most.
Yeah.
I mean, he's way on one end of the spectrum with regards to how he is creating proximity, even if he's not physically co-located.
Mm-hmm. So, Tucker, we talked about the office physically, but how about Indiana? Like, you probably weren't someone that had Indiana on your, like, top five places to go visit or live, right? How has your wife adjusted to the move? What do you guys think of Indiana 2.5 months in?
Yeah, we've never lived this far east. It's really neat. Just last weekend, we went down to Louisville.
Yeah. Oh, no way.
Did Urban Bourbon Trail, Nathan.
Louisville.
He's got to learn how to say Louisville.
Yeah, look at this guy from the West.
I was worried about mispronouncing it. That's funny. Pointing that out.
Go down there and call it Louisville.
Louisville.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
No, Nathan here in the office recommended some places for me to drop in, and so we had a good whiskey tour down there. And we're going to enjoy taking short jaunts in, you know, a wagon wheel approach.
Yeah.
Because you can get to some really interesting places for a very small investment in drive time. Yep. 2, 3, 4 hours.
Yeah.
You can be all over the country.
Yeah.
It's neat. So I've lived in some exotic places and in ways that I've enjoyed, but other people may not. You know, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan where it snows like most of the
year. That is a godforsaken place.
Northern Minnesota, we had that, you know, 2014 polar vortex where it was 40 below for 2 weeks.
Oh my.
Then, you know, Arizona and the desert heat, 120 degrees on the tarmac in the summer. So Indiana's beautiful. I mean, we got four mild seasons.
You're going to get snow.
The places you've lived. You're
gonna
get
exactly. This is true story. You're going to get snow today. We're supposed to get a couple inches of snow.
Yep.
Next week, it's going to be close to 70 degrees.
I know. Can't
wait. 2 days ago, it was 60.
Yeah.
It just keeps flipping.
Yep.
But I want people to get a small glimpse into you. You're now living in the racing capital of the world. At least that's what I believe. Indianapolis is racing capital of the world. You race, which we didn't know that I didn't know this when you first came here. So tell us about like, what do you do when you're not working? And you're not going to Louisville.
Yeah, no, I do dabble in cars like Patton and Jake can attest. We talk about it all the time. It's one of my passions that we share as a group, but I got a couple of cars that I like to drive. You know, on the racetrack,
speed limit,
on the racetrack, drive them, you know, to the limit. I got a good friend in Arizona who introduced me to the sport a few years back. And this is the racing capital of the U.S. There's a lot of different kinds of racing that I haven't been exposed to yet. Jake has promised to take me to some, what are they called? Figure eights. Racing, half demolition derby.
You know, the day we know you're fully indoctrinated in the Midwest cultures is when you walk in here and ask us to sponsor a dirt car. Like
we have gotten so
like a, maybe like a midget or like a like a modified or so, like when you come in and say, hey, you know what, I want to do a dirt car. Now Patton's asking for like a demolition style
demo.
What are these 24 hours of?
Okay, so we can explain this lemons together. The lemon. So it's a limit of, what is it, $500?
You can only spend $500 on your car.
And this is a car that you have to race for 24 hours.
Endurance
racing. So it's, you know, we've all had the junk cars that they'll run. You can drive them an hour down the road before they overheat. No, this is 24 hours of racing. And at the end of 24 hours, whoever has completed the most laps wins. So, you know, the fun of having a junk car that you always have to work on, but now you also have to race it. I mean, doesn't that just sound
amazing?
Imagine convertible PT Cruiser with racing stripes.
Hey, I'm in. Maybe he's already indoctrinated in the Midwest. Yeah. That sounds like a Midwest thing. So how would your wife, if your wife were here with us, and I always ask this because I think this is super important, right? I think if you're happy at home, you're better at work. How would your wife answer our question? If we were to ask her, you know, when Tucker comes home, how does he talk about his career, his current job? Like how happy is he with his decision? How fulfilled is he at work? Like compared to the other places you've lived and worked, and, you know, maybe some of this, you know, you can attribute to living in Indiana. Maybe some of it's just the team here. There are good days and bad days. We all know this.
Sure.
But like, how would your wife rank you now versus sometimes in the past?
I would confidently say she would say that it's a night and day difference.
Wow.
I think the biggest
for the better.
For the better. Okay. Yeah. on I would say my stress level and maybe not so much my free time, but what I'm doing with my free time instead of, you know, constantly checking in and stressing about what's going on. I'm engaging in hobbies again, which is amazing. Right.
Cool.
You know, I just put up a 2-post lift in my garage. It's been a dream of mine my whole life to
have a
lift. And so I'm finding time to go out and do things I enjoy, she adores. So night and day difference, you know, for lots of different reasons. Yeah. It's geographical. There's not as much of an extreme here that guides your life and what you do with your time. But it's the environment in this office, I think, that's really enabled it more than anything else.
Cool. That's cool. That's a great answer.
That's a great answer. I don't know if your wife would have said the same 2.5 months in.
I think so. I mean, I would say, I think...
She would say the same now, I would right? Say,
well, for sure now. But even then, I mean, Bloomington is a great place. Like, and I know it's not, you know, some metropolis, but like it does make life pretty easy. And I think Tucker highlighted that well. I love the 4 mild seasons comment. Like it's a really good one. I think the other thing is when you're building something and you feel passionate about building that, like it just spills into everything that you're doing. And so, I've worked at large companies before too. And, you know, I've been fortunate where I've been on like the new project. So you've been able to, you know, kind of have that passion. You're not managing something that's been there for 100 years. You're trying to create something new. But I have purposefully not taken jobs inside of large companies where it would just be a management job. And I don't know that I would come home like on fire if that were the case.
Yeah.
Whereas here, you know, we are building something. And to an earlier comment you made, like we're creating the rules along the way. And I think that can be felt well beyond these 4 walls. I mean, you can see it in your kids, you can see it in your spouse. Like, so yeah. I think at 2.5 months, she wouldn't know it as well as she knows it now, but I think she'd probably say, yeah, Thomas is happier than he was at other places.
Now the cynic out there would ask, are you still in the honeymoon phase?
Of being here.
At yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
I'm sure there's truth to that.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll settle into a groove and the everyday frustrations will climb up and you'll have to deal with them just like you do at any other job.
Has he gotten tired of me yet? Like, has he ever walked in and said, what is this guy?
Like being honest on this podcast right now.
Yeah.
No. No, I think it's going well.
Yeah. Okay. But I think... I'll come back to the tension comment that we've made, right? Like I do actually think healthy tension can be a good thing, whether it's about values or team dynamic. Like I think someone getting pissed off at somebody else isn't necessarily bad, especially if it's about something constructive, right? Like, hey, I didn't see this and like what we were misaligned here. Like I think that's an okay
thing. I think it's the best. I don't remember who I told this to. Maybe it was Austin. I know I told this to Sarah. Like, my goal for them personally this year is to get visibly and vocally pissed off at me and confront me about it.
That was a goal of mine, actually, a couple years ago.
Remember? Yeah. Now you're doing it too much. So let's back off a little bit. But I think why I say it's a good thing is because we always get to the best result.
Yes.
If you're upset about something that I am saying or doing, or another teammate is saying or doing, talking about it, someone's going to win the argument, and hopefully they back it up with some data, or, you know, their stance can be seen by others around them, right? Like, to me, we always get to the best result.
And I think you know, to kind of put that in the honeymoon phase kind of concept they were talking about, I have seen Tucker already start to push back against people. So I would argue, yes, you're in the honeymoon phase, it's 2.5 months, but I also think we're even seeing the signs of, like, when Tucker is past the honeymoon phase, what that looks like. And to me, it still looks very positive. Like the what he's driving towards, and kind of, I always talk about the ripples that you're making. Like, I think there's a lot of positive ripples that are coming out of that.
Yeah. I see Tucker. I think you and your most heated, frustrated point is the type of guy that gets the person on the phone and says something along the lines of, you know, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. I don't think you're the guy that throws an apple through one of these glass walls. But, you know, we'll see. I can't wait.
I think we actually heard maybe a very similar sentence to that, you know, about a week and a half ago. You're probably pretty accurate.
Okay, there. So he's getting there. Was he disappointed in me?
You know, I think the difference in, like, kind of what you're getting at and the advice you gave is, like, the willingness to engage on that level and share that frustration. It's the difference in being, like, diligent and passionate and not. Because if you're just like, okay, go with the flow on, you know, whatever happens, then you're not engaging enough. You're not driving it. You're not creating the friction to, like, get us to a better place if you're just letting the situation or conversation steer you.
Okay, so we're an hour in. Try to keep these to an hour. Sometimes they run long. We actually have a call to jump on. So I'll leave you with this one. And this is what, you know, especially for people new, I'm always curious about. What are you excited about or looking forward to? You know, you're 2.5 months in. You've kind of drank as much as you can from the fire hose. I would say your feet are under you. You know the team. You know strengths and weaknesses for most of the people that you're working alongside. You know our business pretty well. You've got to know most of our customers, I think, pretty well. What gets you excited about the future? Because I told you when you came here, give it 6 months. I don't want you to do anything for 6 months other than build relationships and get context and how our business is operating, you know, good, bad, or ugly. And obviously you've done way more than I expected in your first 2.5 months. So, but you've also built relationships really well. I think you've got a ton of context. Let's say you're 6 months in, 9 months in. What's going to keep you excited about what we're doing, what we're trying to build, what this means for you personally, like selfishly in this group of people? What gets you excited?
I think this is a really exciting time for the business, and it's neat to be able to have a seat on that bus. Patton and I have been working closely on some organizational structure. You know, purposefully designing how our business and how our folks are laid out and what the roles are so that we can enable some growth in this company. And this company's seen crazy growth for 6 years, 7 years already. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. And I know that, you know, bringing on Jeff as a CFO, you know, working on some of this stuff that, will help us grow sustainably with Patton, the next 6 or 7 years are not going to look like the first 6 or 7 years. The growth is going to be surprising, and I'm excited to be part of the team that's getting us ready for that.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I mean, that's what gets me the most excited as well. There's a guy I follow on Instagram. Swap messaged with him over the years. He runs an artificial turf business.
I know who you're talking about.
His name's Dylan. Yeah. He he's owned this business for like 11 years. He started it. He's a founder. And he runs like a distribution. They do installs. He just announced a couple days ago that he is out of the business.
Yeah.
He's probably like 30 years old, 32
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's out of the business. And I'm like, well, dang, he sold, you know, probably going to ride off into the sunset on his yacht. It's a big business. He's done amazing things with this. And he went on to say, no, I didn't sell it. I have built the team in such a way that they can do this so much better without me than if I'm still the guy here running the day-to-day. So, you know, I get to be kind of one of these guys standing from the outside looking in at how awesome they're doing. And I thought, man, that is, to me, like the epitome of building something. And Pat and I get frustrated at each other sometimes because I don't want to be the owner-operator that has to have my hand in everything. I'm trying really hard not to be a micromanager because it's my natural tendency. And so, you know, how I think of us being successful as a team is just that, building the team, building people.
An amazing job of that, I'll say, in like the last month. And it's the subtle difference of if somebody calls you and asks you something, and you've done this on the call yesterday, you're like, okay, well, what do we need to do? And, you know, you obviously get a response, and it's just this like subtle, you almost get like slapped in the face with like a, well, I guess I'll just tell you what we need to do. And then your response will be like, okay, why aren't we doing it? And so kudos. It's past.
Well, me. I say the thing I'm most excited about is building this team and watching the team grow, watching individuals grow, watching people, you know, kind of chase after this land grab of responsibilities and what they want to own in the business. And me owning less of it. To me, that's what makes me excited. So, yeah. Pumped to have you on the team. Pumped to have you physically here in Bloomington. Remind me to take out a key man policy if he's going to run a $300 vehicle 24 hours because that sounds not great. Sounds like a death trap. But I think the first 2.5 months it still feels like honeymoon. I think we're all pleasantly surprised at how well you've done and meshed with the team. You feel like one of us that's been here for a lot of years. I love it. Pumped to have you here. Thanks for, we're going to do this again.
Yeah.
Like 6 months and we'll see. You'll be 8.5, 9 months in. He's either going to have a lot of really fun, cool things to say, or it's going to be a nightmare. We'll see.
I love the public commitment. Oh, that's great.
This has been fun. Any words to send us off? Anybody? I have a way I like to send us off.
Yeah. Send it. Do it.
Should I?
Yeah.
Okay. 100%. Turner Mining Live, if you've liked the podcast, if you've loved the podcast, like, share, subscribe, send it to someone you love. If you've hated it, send it to someone you hate. Thanks.
See you guys.
This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live.